about that.
On the Fly with Jaymon G. On the Fly is on the air.
We are back at the Vintage Red Barn. Beautiful Air Venture Monday 2011. HG Frouchy and I are chilling out under the awning here. New for this year for us.
Thanks for bringing your own shade. I appreciate that.
We have to thank Steve Boos for that.
I will be sure and thank him.
All right. We have a lot to talk about in the remaining half hour of our segment today. A lot of things are happening down here at the Red Barn and in Vintage. And let's tell our listeners how they can find you.
The easiest way when you come in the main gate, if you happen to come in that main center gate and you come right down to ConocoPhillips Plaza, if you look to your right, you'll see a red wayfinding tower. There are wayfinding towers, four of them here on the grounds. And the red one underneath it is the Vintage Aircraft Association's north end of the field. And right below that, you'll see our airmail display that we put in place in conjunction with EAA. You know, there are so many great things we wanted to highlight this year during this year's Air Venture. And, of course, the anniversary of Naval Aviation is a big part of that. And we simply ran out of real estate for places that we wanted to do some really cool things. So EA came to us and said, we'd really like to put this together, but we're out of space. Can you help us host it? And we were thrilled to be able to do it. Of course, the airplanes are aircraft of our era, so that made it easy for us to say yes. And one of the things that we put together under the direction of one of our key volunteers, Michael Blombach, was we put together an entire airmail shack. We built that from scratch here on the grounds based on some photographs and some other materials that we had.
Right out of the 20s.
It's your basic shack you'd find on an airmail field. In fact, the roof on that came from Adam Smith, who's our vice president of membership here at EAA. He has a piece of property south of town here, just south of the airport, that he was renovating, and he built a house on it. One of the things they had to do when they built that house was knock down an old barn. And about that old barn was not only was the wood pretty cool, but it had a tin roof, and that or tin roof depending on where you're from. But that tin roof, I'm a roof guy. That tin roof, we've got pieces of that. That's what's covering our airmail shack. So I can't wait for later on in the year. I don't want it right now, but later on in the year, I want to go in there when it's thunderstorming, because I bet it makes a great racket.
Well, not only that, but it's probably be cool to just sit in there and imagine what it was like back in the day when the guy's waiting for the airmail plane to come and the thunderstorm's going through and he's hunkered down in there, you know, with his bags of mail.
Just waiting for it to happen. What we've done is we've tried to give you as much of the flavor and the history by timeline of U.S. airmail. The very first U.S. airmail flight in the United States took place on September 23rd, 1911. Just outside of Mineola, Long Island, New York. And at an international air meet that was being held there, the Postmaster General at the time decided that it was high time for the very first U.S. airmail flight to occur. He was already aware of some of the efforts around the world, and he felt that it was time for them to do it. So he put together a system, so they had a shack, or actually a tent, there on the field in Garden City, I believe. And what they did was they collected mail, put it in a sack, put it in Earl Ovington's lap. He volunteered to be the first airmail pilot. They swore him in. And he had a 19 Blériot that was actually a replica of the channel crossing airplane that Louis Blériot flew across the channel in 1909.
We had one sitting right here last year.
Yes, a very similar project. And Earl Ovington had one that's almost identical to ours. The only difference between our airplane and Earl's airplane was that we chose to put an Anzani engine on it, which matches the Blériot engine. Now, that's a significantly less horsepower. In fact, almost only a third of the horsepower that Blériot, it's the same that Blériot had, but a third of the horsepower that Ovington had. That airplane, Ovington's airplane, had 70 horsepower, so it was able to carry that load. I'll tell you right now, if somebody put a sack of mail in Tom Hagee's lap when we were test hopping this back in June, it would not have flown.
No, and that Anzani is what was on the airplane.
It was on the original Blériot airplane, but on the Ovington airplane, they had a 70-horse copy of a Gnome built by Indian, and airplane 5 miles. He would put that mail in his lap, fly it 5 miles, throw it over the side at a target near the post office in Mineola. They would collect the sack, or on the first flight, they collected the pieces that fell out of the sack because the sack burst apart on impact. And that was the start of U.S. Airmail. And in fits and starts throughout the early teens and then through the war, there were some efforts made, but of course it was still very much in its infancy. But in the 1920s, that's when it really grew up. And you'll notice we have two Sirman C-3s here on the grounds. They're directly outside here, one from Mike Williams and one from Ron Alexander. And we have a Joe Santana brought his Travel Air 4000. There were some routes that actually flew them early on. It also became very quickly apparent that those airplanes that were not purpose-built for airmail were at a disadvantage. And airplanes need to be bigger and faster. So you remember the Boeing Model 40 that was here a couple of years ago?
Sure, Eddie Pemberton's.
Yes, Edison Pemberton's airplane. That airplane was a purpose-built airplane. It was designed to carry as much mail as possible, along with a couple of passengers. But it was a purpose-built airplane. The Pitcairn PA-7 that you see out here, the sport mail wing, that's another in that family of Pitcairn mail wings that were built specifically to carry the mail. And then on the far side of that, we have Greg Herrick's Golden Wings Aviation Museum's Stinson Trimotor, his SM-6000. That airplane was also designed to carry both the mail and passengers.
Now, is Greg Herrick's Trimotor going to be here?
Yeah, it's actually on the other side. Well, it was on the other side. They had to fly it this morning, but it will be on the other side of the Fairchild FC-2, which is part of our EAA collection. It was here this afternoon, and yeah, now that I peer over there around the signs, I see that it's not there right now, but it'll be back.
And Greg Herrick has a couple of trimotors. He's got the Ford trimotor as well, but I see it. It's noticeably missing. Is it coming?
No, I don't believe that is coming this year. And you're correct. He has the oldest flying 4AT trimotor. That was the airplane that was flown by Lindbergh to fly his mom down to Mexico City. Greg has that airplane. He has the low-wing Stinson trimotor, and then he also has this high-wing Stinson trimotor.
And he's a big fan of trimotors.
He loves civilian airplanes, and his dream was to create a collection of really good civilian airplanes. So many folks collect warbirds, and that's a great thing, but not collected civilian aircraft like Greg did.
Right, and he has a beautiful collection. I've slept in his hangar, so I know.
His collection's kept up at the Anoka County Airport in north of Minneapolis, St. Paul area.
That's really beautiful. I was thinking that there might be a concert tonight somewhere around here.
Well, just before you went on the air, they were doing some sound checks, and I was beginning to wonder whether or not we were going to get to have some background music.
We're getting a preview of REO Speedwagon and Vintage.
But we seem to be doing just fine.
So we're down to what row, HG?
Last time I checked, we were right around 1:30.
Fantastic.
But that was actually a couple hours ago, so I'm sure we're picking that up. And like I said, I would expect that when we're all said and done, we'd have somewhere between 800 and 900 airplanes on the ground here, which is a pretty typical year. We have over 25 past Grand Champions, which would be parked right along the Whitman Road. That's the main north-south road. So if you come to the Vintage Red Barn, stop by, have a piece of have some pie and a drink of lemonade, and find out any other questions you may have. The info folks here will be happy to help you out. And then you can walk south on Whitman and look left, primarily to the left, and you'll see all of our past Grand Champions and Reserve Grand Champions. Everything from Ray Johnson's Ronca Chief, which is sitting right out here. And just very quickly, we should mention that Ray hosts every day Vintage in Review at 11 o'clock every morning. He interviews two folks, and we bring the airplanes right up here where people can sit in and enjoy a nice interview with Ray talking to the folks who have their airplanes, and it's right out in front of the Red Barn.
Let's see. I think I saw Jimmy Rollison's Cessna 310 out there.
If that's Jimmy's now, yes. But it's painted in the Songbird colors. Those of you who remember Sky King, that airplane is painted up like that. And then the other aircraft that was over there, now I just drew a blank.
There's a Cessna 140 over there.
That's right. There was a 140 there this morning. And every day those airplanes will change.
Uh-huh.
And Ray will have a new interview to do. We'll do two of those every day at 11. And we'll talk about some other stuff that we've got coming up in the Vintage Hangar as well. Not only are the type clubs happening in the majority of that type club building, but we'll talk about some of the other things we'll do down there after the break.
After the break. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back. We are down at Vintage, EAA Radio on the air, and we are on the fly.